number two, which is Michaels versus the FDIC. It's number 103109. And it's Mr. Carlin. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel. May it please the Court. My name is Lawrence Carlin. I represent the petitioners. This is an appeal from a decision of the FDIC Board entering an order of prohibition against Robert Michael and George Michael, prohibiting them from further participation in banking. The Michaels were the principal shareholders and founding directors of Citizens Bank and Trust Company of Chicago. That was a small community bank located in a diverse Northwest Side ethnic neighborhood. And it was a true community bank. It received the designation of Community Development Financial Institution, which it held from 2004 to 2008. And in a time of mega bank mergers, it served its community well, making small business loans, home rehabilitation loans.
Forgive me, Mr. Carlin. Could we? We really have read everything in the brief. So I'd like to ask you this. You argue that there's no evidence that George had any connection to the Harvey hospitality deal other than signing the loans. Well, it seems to me that signing the loan is the event that makes one culpable. I mean, it's sort of like saying that a defendant had no connection to a bank robbery other than handing the bank teller the stick-up note.
I think it really relates to the underlying charge that they're bringing relating to that. The underlying loan, there were two Harvey hospitality loans, as you recall, because a deal that was supposed to close simultaneously with Big Two acquiring it out of a foreclosure and then immediately flipping it to the end purchaser, Harvey Hospitality LLC, did not occur simultaneously. The original closing was in December of 2000, and the loan closing from Harvey Hospitality on a loan by Citizens Bank was some 6 months later in June of 2001. The loan itself has never been questioned, even by the FDIC, during its 2002 examination, 2003. It was a righteous loan.
Even though the bank loaned more money than is allowed under the limits of the regulation?
The bank did not lend more money than it was allowed. It was a $2.9 million loan. It was participated to three banks. The underlying charge is not that they lent too much money. The underlying charge here with regard to the Harvey hospitality loan is that, one, it was an insider transaction and that they had a tangible economic benefit from it.
They received a check for $55,000 plus labeled net proceeds to seller.
That is absolutely correct, that there was a check of $55,000. And they also received the benefit of having $1.4 million in loans from First Bank paid off and a $700,000 loan from United Trust Bank paid off. Those are benefits as well. The arguments raised below and in our brief is that it falls within the exception to the tangible economic benefit in that there was no evidence in this record whatsoever that the terms of the underlying loan were more favorable than would have been allowed to a non-insider. The loan was at a market interest rate. It was supported by adequate collateral. It was supported by an appraisal of the underlying property at $3.75 million, an appraisal which was done by the same appraiser that did the appraisal for First Bank.
So but there's also, it seems to me, ample evidence that Harvey Hospitality Loans was part of a scheme to sell the property at a fabricated price.
That is the underlying allegation. The petitioners obviously dispute that. First, the scheme, if there was a scheme, originated, and go back to the original intent, in, I believe it was July of 2000, a person named Mr. O'Shaughnessy, who was a banker at the bank that was holding the paper on the hotel, approached Mr. Michael and said, do you want to buy this? Because the Michaels were in the real estate business as well as the banking business. And Robert Michael's reaction to that was absolutely not. I don't want to go any because the property was bleeding money.
Yeah, but
I do know
that,
somebody that
eventually, you know, there they are.
Yeah, eventually
let's get to where they are.
But the original intent was, I can find somebody to take this off your hands. He took it to a person named Sonny Gabuala, who had a history in hotel management, who was interested in buying that. Mr. Gabuala was originally sent to a banker at a bank in Palatine by the name of Ragland, who turned him down, and then he negotiated.
Mr. Carlin, does it make sense that Gabuala would take out a $2.9 million loan to retire the debt of Robert and George? Why wouldn't they take out their own loan or pay off the debt themselves? Does that make any sense? I mean, like,
It does, in the sense that if you go back to what I was saying, the original intent was that Mr. Gabuala was going to buy this property for $2.55 million. He was immediately going to, without ever having owned it in his own right for more than a second, pass it on to the outlying purchaser, Harvey Hospitality. That happens all the time. I can enter into a contract to sell a piece of property to you even though I don't own it. As long as I have a contract to acquire it from person A, I can pass it to person C.
So you can sell me the Brooklyn Bridge?
If someone is willing to sell me the Brooklyn Bridge, I can sell it to you before I own it. Absolutely. And that was what the intent was here. Mr. Gabuala was going to buy it out of foreclosure, sell it to Harvey Hospitality. It was all going to occur simultaneously. What happened was is that the deal fell apart because Mr. Gabuala could not obtain the financing that he needed for the front-end acquisition. The Michaels stepped in, essentially provided what was a bridge loan so that the Harvey Hospitality property could be acquired under an Articles of Agreement. They refied that out, and the Michaels ultimately only received back what they put in.
Is there anything in the record below that will help us to indicate what personal property there is in that dilapidated hotel that was worth $1.3 million?
I don't know that there was substantial evidence admitted by either side as to the personal property. Certainly there's hotel equipment, there's the furniture and fixtures that are typical to a hotel operation, but I don't believe that there was an itemization other than the general description in the asset purchase agreement, which is part of the record. I believe it Exhibit 197 or 198.
Can
I just have one more question?
Please, go ahead.
John.
Go ahead.
Why wasn't it disclosed that Harvey Hospitality was in default under the installment agreement at the time that it applied for the loan?
Because they weren't in default.
What?
They were not in default. The allegation was that they were in default for two reasons. One, they didn't close within the time provided. It said the closing was supposed to take place by April 1, and it didn't take place till June. The second...
Well, if that's not default, I don't know what is, but okay.
Well, parties between a buyer and a seller, parties can agree in the terms of the agreement, allowed them to close on that date or such other date as agreed to by the parties. And the parties agreed to close it at a later date so long as the installment payments continued to be made. Because we recall the installment payments were absolutely to the penny the same as the carry costs on the two Michael loans. And That was the purpose of the installment agreement, was to pay the interest on the Michael loans while the permanent financing was being arranged, so that it would merge the front end of the flip versus the back end of the flip. The other alleged default is that they weren't making the $60,000 payments. Mr. Michael refuted that, I think effectively at the trial, showing, one,
well,
that the payments
the judge
on the...
Well, I sure didn't think that that was the... I mean...
That is true. But there's an exhibit in the record. It's exhibit 53.
And that's really what I want to get to in terms of the process. I appreciate you're a very persuasive advocate, and you've written a marvelous brief. And if we're hearing this, the three of us were hearing this in the first instance, you might persuade us of the correctness of your positions. But to get where you want us to go, we've got to overturn a whole bunch of credibility determinations that were made adverse to your clients, and then decide a bunch of credibility determinations that were decided against your clients in their favor. I just don't see how we can get there.
I think
it might be fun. I might enjoy it, but I don't think as an appellate court that's what we do.
I agree that it is not the function of this court to second-guess the trier of fact, particularly, and this is two steps removed because, you know, it was heard by an administrative law judge.
With a 142-page opinion and not just paper, it was some detail, some real detail, and careful analysis of all three of these transactions.
Absolutely.
And if that ALJ was right on one of them, your guys are gone.
The issues of credibility, where it is witness A says this versus witness B says that, clearly that is the third rail that this court should never touch. The question becomes is whether there was underlying evidence to support the AJC's findings to begin with. That is a germane exercise, to say, is there something to say that support the testimony of certain witnesses? The other, I would say, carve-out to that is that when testimony is facially incredible, this court, and there is other evidence in the record of testimony contradicting it, that this court can, on that type of record, reject the facially incredible testimony.
You're right to your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, is it Agna Bene?
Yes, Your Honor. That's fine. Sorry, it's a hard name. Good morning. May it please the court. Michelle Agnabeni on behalf of the respondent, FDIC. The primary purpose of the orders at issue is to prevent irresponsible and undesirable practices by those who control, manage, or help to operate banks. This is necessary to ensure the soundness of the banking system and protect depositors not just from actual losses, but from the potential for losses. Key to this enforcement scheme is weeding out bank insiders who put their interests ahead of the banks. And the record here shows that the Michaels did this on a number of occasions. And not just that, but they also put other banks at risk by misrepresenting the status of collateral that they were pledging. And the banks have pointed out that they would not have made these loans if they had known the true status of the collateral. Their actions plainly show a lack of concern for the high standards of prudence that bank officers and directors are expected to uphold, and the record amply supports the board's decision. I'd like to point out a few things that were mentioned by Mr. Carlin.
Before you do, just let me ask you to send us page 4 of the FDIC's order, because it's missing from the short appendix.
Oh, yes. It's actually the entirety, including page 4, is in the FDIC supplemental appendix, if you have that handy.
You know what page it's on?
I can...
2083, third paragraph, is where it should be.
It's FDIC SA4. Yeah, I had noticed that was missing, so I just included the whole thing.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Sure. No. The first thing that I wanted to just address was, Judge Robner, you had asked about whether the Harvey Hospitality loan violated the lending limits in Regulation O. And if you look at 215.5, there is a provision that restricts lending to executive officers, and Robert Michael would be considered an executive officer, and it restricts it to $100,000. That's the lending limit to executive officers. And so although you might say that because you know, if all of the requirements of Regulation O for prior approval, and there are definite clear questions about that, whether those were complied with, that the board found they were not. But even if those had been complied with, a loan to Robert Michael of more than $100,000 would have violated Regulation O anyway.
You bring up a question. The Michaels say that they discussed their interest in the financing of the hotel at that board meeting on December 13th of 2000. Is it disputed whether or not the board knew about their interest in the hotel?
I believe it is disputed. I would dispute it because there, although there was this discussion in December when the Michaels were trying to find the $700,000 to plug this shortfall for their initial purchase of the hotel, the board decided not to lend them the money. They did not get that loan from the bank. And so there's really nothing to show that all of the board members knew that they eventually acquired the bank. In fact, the loan approval sheet shows that two of the board members, at least one of them, was an outside director, and there's no testimony from him that he knew that the Michaels had acquired this hotel, and he did not sign the loan approval sheet. And so there is a question of whether all of the board members knew about the Michaels' ownership of the hotel and that they would benefit from the Harvey Hospitality loan. And there's also a question of whether a majority of the disinterested board members, in fact, signed off on the loan, because that loan approval sheet also includes the signatures of both of the Michael brothers, who should not have been approving a loan that would benefit themselves in the first place.
What's your best evidence that George knew of the double pledging of his stock?
Well, George signed multiple documents repeatedly in connection with these loans that clearly disclosed the collateral that was being pledged. Those facts are undisputed. In the stipulations, you'll see a long catalog of that.
He doesn't dispute his signature on those documents?
No, he does not. And in fact, they're in the stipulations, which are included in one of the appendices, and it recites that Robert and George executed, and it has a long catalog of lists where he signed these loan-related documents that list the collateral. The fact that he says he didn't read those documents, you know, he's a bank director. He's expected in his dealings with banks to adhere to high standards of prudence and care, and, you know, it's just not acceptable.
Did Galeano ever take any civil action against the brothers for falsely securing a loan in his name?
You know, I'm not sure, Your Honor. I don't think he did, but I'm not sure. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, I'll leave the rest of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Carlin, how much time?
3 minutes.
Okay.
With regard to the lending limit discussion of $100,000 lending limit, the loan in question here that the charges relate to is only the $2.9 million loan. That loan was to Harvey Hospitality. It was not to the Michaels. The Michaels' loans that they took 6 months earlier to acquire the property on behalf of Mr. Gabawala are not the subject of the charges. The lending limit issue really does not apply because the loan was not to Mr. Michael. It was to Harvey Hospitality. Second of all, whether the board actually knew, the board absolutely knew, and there's unequivocal evidence in the record of that. On December 30, 2000, Mr. Robert Michael sent a letter to the board that began with, in compliance with and pursuant to Section 215.9, we are disclosing that we have taken out a loan for the purpose of acquiring and identified the Harvey Hospitality property, and that we anticipate that this loan will be paid off upon the resale of the property. That was lodged with the Board of Directors on December 30, or 10 days after the initial closing. So the board...
What we've got here are a number of transactions and a very convoluted nature of one loan paying off another, and then another paying off that one. And if that doesn't reek of deceit, I just don't know whatever will, Mr. Carter. And, you know, as Brother Tinder said, you know, you're like a miracle in what, you know, in what you've managed to, you know, give us, but it doesn't fly.
I think the convoluted nature of the charge speaks to why it is not sufficient to remove these gentlemen from banking. They had to
from banking, maybe from Chicago.
The charge has to be cobbled together from bits and pieces. This was really a fairly simple transaction that was made difficult. Mr. Gabawala...
By who?
It was made difficult by the way the FDIC has put it together in order to create charges that otherwise wouldn't exist. For example, that the Michaels had a duty to disclose the price. If Mr. Gabawala or if Harvey Hospitality in its own right had applied for a loan to buy this property for $3.9 million, and the deal was that that loan was going to pay for the initial acquisition out of the foreclosure, the fact that there was a middleman in there that was getting a what's called a promoted equity would never come up in their loan application. And it would frankly be irrelevant for the lending bank giving the $3.9 million. Its queries are, will the collateral support the loan? What is the loan-to-value ratio? Here we had a property that was appraising at $3.7 million, supporting a $2.9 million loan. Bing, that's fine. The second inquiry that the lending bank would make, if the loan was Harvey Hospitality and that was the only loan ever made, was does the underlying credit of the guarantors support the loan? Clearly that applied here. They had $13 million in assets. They had $700,000 in annual income. The fact that there was an interim sale was the result of the financing problems of Mr. Gabawala and the Michaels merely stepping in to keep the deal from being lost as a result of the forfeiture of the earnest money. That's all that happened here. And the Michaels, you know, the theory here, the underlying theory by the FDIC is that they entered into a scheme to make a profit. I find it highly ironic that the underlying charge then is that you closed the loan, but you didn't pay the full purchase price, so there ain't no profit. They entered into a scheme to flip it at a profit, and then they get charged for not being paid the full purchase price and making no profit. If that is not convoluted, I don't know what better word to describe it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
I hope you're
not busy because I'm going to engage you to buy the Brooklyn Bridge for me. Case will be taken under advisement. And we will go on to the...